Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Geniuses, Poets, and Artists. My name is Kim, and I'm here today with Hafiz. Hi, Hafiz.
Hello, hi.
Hi, Hafiz. Hafiz is one of our current students here. He's taking our 301 class. In fact, he's going to take one right after the recording of this. And we have been so fortunate to have him here with us. Tell us, Hafiz, who are you?
Who am I? I'm still figuring that out, but my name's Al-Hafiz Sanusi. I'm 30 years of age. I'm a Singaporean, a Malay Muslim Singaporean, and I do have a full-time job. I'm working with a travel startup company as a QA analyst, which is a quality assurance analyst. Are you taking down notes?
This is because my short-term memory, after about 10 years of improvising, my short-term memory is quite... not great, right? So, like, if there are small details that fly past, I'll be like, I remember that. So, this is kind of a... When I'm on phones, this is what happens. When there's no one looking at me, like in a podcast, this is what happens.
That's how
I try to come back to details that are interesting.
That's great. That's very good. Very good tension.
Yeah, except I can't do that on stage, which is a pity.
Anyway, I'm a QA analyst for a customer service team. So, I look at the customer service emails as well as... calls because of the fact that I'm an English major, right? So they employ me for this set of skills. But in the evening, then I do more creative stuff like theater, spoken word, improv. So usually the line that I use when I go on dates is in the day, I critique people. In the evening, I get critiqued by people. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's quite a variety of things. So from QA in the daytime to... you mentioned spoken word, improv. Was there something else?
Theater as well. Theater. Like acting and writing.
Yeah, that's right. You were part of the Young and Wild program last year?
Yes, I was actually.
Yeah, last year. Sorry, time is such stretched and it's a bit like taffy these days.
It feels so long ago. Yeah.
It does. We're almost at the halfway mark of 2021, right?
It's June already and we're like, is this 2020?
Yeah, it feels like 2020, but it's not. And, and things are a little bit different, right? But... improving, maybe, not sure, possibly.
It is. As of today, we have the news of two people in restaurants, right? They can eat out. They can, eat outside. To two people.
Yeah, a bit like a yo-yo though, like because a week ago they were saying, oh, you can have five people dining in, and then the week went by, and Bukit Merah view got increasingly worse and worse, and then we were like, okay, what are they gonna do now? And then they're like, instead of five people dining out, you can have two people dining out.
Yeah.
Which could have been worse. It could have been no people dining out. What was happening maybe 3 weeks ago. So this, May has been very much a yo-yo kind of month for us.
It's like you have to take it week by week.
Yeah, which is it's really hard to plan for things like that because we got shows coming up, we have classes coming up, and people are constantly, what's the rules now? And I'm asking, I don't know what the rules are. What are the rules now? And then the government is like, I don't know what the rules are going to be in a week because who knows which place is going to have a cluster now.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but on a day to day we do stuff. Spoken word, so that's poetry.
So basically, it's poetry being performed on stage. Mm-hmm. So I would advise people. Let's say if that's something they're interested in, to maybe just Google or YouTube. There are a couple of famous spoken word artists. Most accessible, I would say people like Sarah Kay or Phil Kay. Basically, it's when you're writing something. You're writing with the intention of it being performed on stage.
Ah, so unlike some poems where you can't really read it out loud, or you read it out loud, it's very different from what's being portrayed.
Yes, right. Somewhat that. Because when you're writing, then you're employing certain techniques, maybe alliteration or onomatopoeia. But if you're writing with the intention to perform, then you also are taking note into cadence, or maybe the tonality, the internal rhyme of certain words that you can get to play with it on stage as well.
Man, I haven't heard these terms since... how old am I now? Oh, geez, 20 years?
You're of the same age, right?
Last time I did it was in JC, which is, I guess... What is that? 15, 16? 17?
Yeah, that was long ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago. Yeah, geez. Well, just outed my own age. Great. Good job, Kim. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed that part. And then because of the whole education system, I went to try and do economics, which was probably the worst mistake of my life.
Yeah, I did that as well.
Oh, you did?
That's the lowest I got for my GC, like economics.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, not nice necessarily, but okay. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
But at least you made a mistake early. You went to English as a major, you mentioned.
I did.
Yeah. So that's, was that here?
Yes. So I went to NTU. So, interesting fact, I actually tried to become an actor. So I enroll into a local acting degree program in Singapore. But it was very costly. Like 3 years, it was 63,000. So I was like, being rational, like, let's not even talk profits. Like, can I just earn back that sum within a year or two? So I decided to go for a more holistic approach. I went to NTU and I did a degree in English. No regrets there, because I found my education was actually really more holistic. Like, I got into writing. I did creative writing. I did pedagogy as well. So,
oh, as part of the English?
Yeah, so degree. I did, like, because there's a, I took a minor in drama, as well as a minor in creative writing. And for
wow,
those people, but for those people in university, right? If especially in like NTU, and you don't want to do your 10,000-word FYP, right? You find that that's too long, right? The best way to go around it is to take a minor in creative writing. Then your final year, instead of writing a 10,000-word essay, you can just write a poem or a play and you submit it as your part of your thesis.
Ah, nice. Okay. So I'm assuming it's not like a 10,000-word saga kind of poem.
No, it's like a collection of poems or like maybe a play with some exegesis to explain it.
Okay. So also a poet then?
I do a bit of writing. I call myself more a dabbler rather than a term, you know.
Okay, so so there's poetry, there's theatre, improv. Is there anything else? It feels like that's quite a few things going on.
We'll get to it if we get to it.
Okay, cool. So what defines you? I mean, you've mentioned a job, you mentioned a bunch of demographic information, you mentioned your major, but how would you describe Al-Hafiz Sanusi, the person?
The definition of Al-Hafiz Sanusi is curiosity, I guess.
Okay.
Curiosity and wonder. I find in life, I get curious easily and that led me to different paths. Like I would say career-wise, you know, I've done teaching to journalism just because I was curious about the nature of work. You know, like you read in the papers and the people like complaining about like Straits Time, new paper. And I'm like, what about... Let me try to understand the system by trying to be part of the system.
Uh-huh.
You know? So that was like my way of like looking at the world and things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, you've been a Straits Times journalist?
No, not a Straits Times journalist, but for a local Malay newspaper.
Okay.
Journalist.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Very interesting process. Yeah. Like.
Cool. Wow. So how many jobs have you had?
Okay, let me just pull out my CV right now. Just
because I know a guy, my current housemate Melvin, he's told me that he's worked in a bunch of weird shit. Like he's been working in a mortuary, he's done a bar.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is like two very different things. He's worked as a like kind of associate manager for a stage production. All kinds of weird stuff. Basically, he does stuff. So, you know, when you mention like, oh, you've done journalism, you're a poet, and you're also a QA analyst?
Yes, now. Let me specify, it's in a fintech industry. An English guy, creative guy, in a fintech industry, just because like, oh, okay, I want a job, so let me just apply for this.
Okay, okay. Do you enjoy the job?
I get paid, so okay. I do enjoy it.
Okay, well, there was a previous interviewee who said, you know, in the middle of it, he was like, I don't know if I want to get... promoted anymore, I'm happy where I am. And then later on he was like, he called me back and said, I think I might regret that, can I listen to that? So just want to make sure that we're doing okay here.
Yeah. I mean, like, what's the listener count for this podcast? Like 10?
50.
Okay, okay.
They're all improvisers, basically. Hi improvisers, if you are improviser, just raise your hands up and say yes. And alright, okay, cool. That's probably every single one
every
of my listeners
one,
right now.
Yeah, I guess being curious helps a lot. So it not just in career, but like, you know, other things I do, like travel or, you know, going back into improv is something like, oh, I'm curious to see if I still can do improv. So I choose to go back and...
Still can do improv. Okay, so just let's I want to circle back to that. Oh. Well, I'm not going to circle back to it. I'm going to address it right now. When you say come back, what was that journey like?
What was that journey like?
Because you said come back. Not some people leave and they never return.
They never return.
Right. And some people just come and they, you know, for the first time and they stay forever.
Mm.
Right. But you say come back. So there's a bit of a departure going on. What happened there?
Yeah, I feel, you know, with life, things happen. So you have other priorities in life.
Sure.
And along the way also, you do get jaded with just the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Basically, the short answer is I wanted to try different things. I guess I wasn't in a good state of health. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to try different things. Mm. But I would say it's always been there because, you know, I also I was doing freelance for a while. I was a school show actor. I did acting okay. for attractions as well.
Mm.
So one other thing is always improv. In a way, I didn't know it was improv, but the skills I was employing was improv related.
Mm.
You know, being able to take that curveball and do something with it, or mm-hmm. being on your feet. You know, always saying yes to the opportunity. So it's, you know, it's always been there. It's just, you know, something I've tried to like break away from. For example, in terms of acting, I've always been typecasted as like the comedic role. So, you know, I guess the reason why I went back for like acting training last year was because I wanted to see if I had range.
Right.
And I found out I do.
You do? Oh, but, awesome. Great.
It's like, yeah, you do?
Yeah, no, but I don't. I've never gone through acting training myself, right? Like I did the theatre studies program in US.
Yes, you did, yeah.
But that's not acting. It's theatre studies. It's how to study theatre, which is not exactly what I signed up for. I enjoy myself, but it didn't necessarily give you acting training.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't necessarily know what that means. Or if maybe a person doesn't have range, would you say that, you know, if you a specific actors may not have the range to do certain kinds of roles? That's possible, right?
It is, but yeah, I would say... I
wouldn't assume of you that you can.
Yeah.
You know. But you do, which is awesome.
I do, but I guess the biggest takeaway was the idea of embrace. So I embrace that I do have, you know, that my strongest suit, I guess, was being able to take that ball and do something with it.
Great.
Yeah, okay. So then... and also partly because I met great people that inspire me to actually pick up improv again. Being
Asher
and Annie.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, so they do. They actually inspire me. I make fun of Asher a lot because of his profession. Because I'm like, oh, psychiatrist, is that really a doctor job? But to be honest, I really respect him. I mean, he makes money and, you know, he's doing well in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they both really inspire me to actually, you know, oh, let me relook at improv again.
Did their improv training kind of like make things different for them when they were in the program?
Ah, you're trying to ask me to assess their...
I have zero idea. Because if I ask them, they're very... Or clearly, from their point of view, it's quite biased. Because they'll be talking about themselves.
Mm.
But I think you're the first person I've talked to about them. Mm. About them being in the program. Who wasn't actually them.
Mm.
That was a very long and dumb sentence. I realise now.
Yeah. Very lot of question marks there. But yes. I would say they offer an interesting perspective to the team.
Okay.
You know, because they've been around the block, you know. So they...
Wait, hang on. Just these no, English majors, just using all these terms that I'm like, what around which block in particular? Is this what metaphorical block are we talking about?
Okay, so I mean, they've been around, age-wise, yeah. I mean, yeah, we are of the same age.
Uh-huh.
So there's some lived experience there as well.
Ah, as opposed to the 15-year-old, 16-year-old.
Yes, so I mean, they have some lived experience, and you know, they have a concept of helping others looking good and helping and embracing what you have.
Mm.
So, you know, I guess when I actually was working with them, it was an enjoyable process because I was working with people who I know that can, essentially, they got my back. You know, like, okay. if something happens to me on stage, they got my back. Mm.
Is the implication that there are some people who don't?
I mean, if you're someone who, in life, generally is very protectionist, you know, you're looking into yourself, you're making sure that, oh, you look good, then, you know, it will not happen. But
okay.
it's very difficult to find those kind of people in improv.
Who are looking for themselves?
Yeah, who are looking out for themselves.
I suppose the ethos of improv tends to
correct. Self-select. Correct, so it's really the ethos of it.
Mm.
But like I said, I I would say if you're circling back around improv, I think this journey actually started out in 2014 because I was doing my exchange in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
That was actually my first introduction to improv because I was taking a module called World Dramaturgy. And one of them we were studying was on Keith Johnston.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keith,
of course.
Okay, so the QA side of me is like, you know your podcast, right?
Yeah.
You know, you should have like a reference list in your podcast.
I should. That's
yeah.
A great idea.
Like a like mentioned. So like if people was like, who is Keith Johnston? Then they like look at your podcast. Oh, then there's a link to for the Wikipedia
that's
page.
That's a great idea. Yeah, you know what? If this is a little bit random, but if you're listening now and you have feedback, please, you know, get in touch at contact@improv.sg. We are more than happy to listen to any kind of feedback you've gotten because you guys are our listeners. And your feedback is important to us. Your experience is important to us. So let us know if you have anything that you think might make this podcast better, both for you and for us.
And Kim, how can they actually send out this feedback to you, Kim?
Oh yeah, I mentioned that. contact@improv.sg. Drop us an email.
Alright, yes. So
yes, references. I will pop a link into the chat for Keith Johnston, one of the founding fathers. Still alive. Somehow, he is old as... I think Methuselah, is that the word? But he is still around, which is great. I took a class with him, actually. But at a point, he was already, I think, in his mid-80s. He had this old man habit of wandering off on tangents. Very interesting tangents, but not what he was talking about originally. He actually told us at the start of class, hey, if I wander off, let me know. And remind me what I was talking about at the start.
Did anyone remind him?
We did. It was fascinating. It was the most fascinating thing, right? Because I had gone in thinking, I mean, when I take classes these days, I'm always looking at improv teachers and think, what are they doing well? What can I steal and incorporate into my own practice? I don't know if I can steal anything from him. He's basically got 50 years of experience. You can't steal that. But he would wander on tangents and his insights were great. He would see what you had done in 3 seconds and then he would drop just a single line and you're like, oh man, yeah, that's exactly what I need to do. Damn. Whereas I think I tend to cloak a lot of my feedback in many words.
And that actually comes from like age and seniority. Like the more you put yourself out there, you know, you interact with different kinds of people, you know, how best to interact, how to say.
Yeah. Love that, yeah. Sorry, I just wonder. So, Keith Johnston, in your World Dramaturgy...
Yes. I believe I also watched my first improv over there.
Okay. Where was this?
This was in New Zealand, in Wellington.
Wellington. Okay. Mm. What group was it? I might know the guy.
I do not know. I have no idea. Okay. Like the calling now, it probably was a long form improv. Mm-hmm. It was like some studio. I have no idea.
That's okay.
Interesting fact, that's how I got to know Miguel. Yeah, because I met Miguel in New Zealand.
What?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to know how Miguel was like pre-improv this, right, I can easily say, yeah.
Like you met him at the show?
No, I met him in New Zealand.
Right, okay.
And you know how I met him? Like the most Singaporean thing. I looked at someone's shoe. Oh, this looks like army shoes. You know those army PT
the
shoes?
The New Balance things?
Something like that. Okay, I'm like, hi, are you Singaporean? Yeah.
So if you'd like to see any of Miguel's army shoes, he's still wearing them. You can check out the live stream that we did in June, where he turns up between shows to talk a little bit about what's coming up. And he's wearing marathon gear. And if you want to know those shoes, look at his feet. Those are army shoes right there.
Yeah.
Link in the bio.
Remy Gally.
Yeah, I'm gonna put a timestamp so you can just click on the link and look at those exact shoes.
I see.
All right. Okay. All right, cool. So, awesome. So, you've known him for ages now?
Yes. So, I mean, back then, he was more of a... I think because he was studying for his degree. So, improv only came later on in his life, right? Yeah.
Okay, cool. Do you know if he watched any improv while he was there?
I do not know that, actually.
Yeah, because he says that his first contact with improv was here in the Blue Jazz. Mm. Those were our early shows when we were starting out. We were just this hole in the wall in Jalan Pisang. We needed a venue. We used Blue Jazz, and apparently that's where he was. I had no idea because, honestly, if you say you were at the Blue Jazz, I wouldn't know because our record keeping is shit.
Speaking of Blue Jazz, I do miss Blue Jazz.
Oh, yeah. Do they not do stuff anymore or is this just a COVID thing right now?
I have no idea, but there was a period of time when I think a couple of years ago in the news it mentioned that they couldn't do like entertainment anymore, right? Or live entertainment.
Yeah, some
their
licensing thing. Yeah, licensing things are fun. Great stuff. All kinds of fun stories go around. with licensing. Yeah, gotta love laws. I love laws. I love being part of society.
I do actually. I find myself to be a very orderly person.
When you say orderly, like you follow laws, or are you like neat and organized?
I am neat and organized, and I follow the law. I try to.
Yes.
You know, like I come from a very traditional, not to say traditional family, but my mom is the, you know, the kind where like every 5 years we'll vote the same party kind.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, she's the kind like if you don't wear a mask, she like wear a mask, you know, I call police.
Oh.
Yeah, and that kind of like brush off to me as well, because I'll be the kind where. In a way, that's why I guess I'm doing QA as well, right? Like, order is something that's very high in terms of my value.
Right.
But at the same time, I like to bend around. Like, if I go to a museum and then they say, do not touch the gallery, I'll be like...
He just touched my my mic stand. Just... Because that this is a podcast, in the moment of like when you were doing that, just everyone's just like, what's going on?
So I just want to describe that.
I just touched my mic stand. Mic stand's fine. There's nothing banning you from touching the mic stand, so I guess it's not as satisfying.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
I got quite a different experience though. So when I was growing up, my mom was convinced that the government was out to get her, to get people in general, and like so she also would vote for the same party every 5 years. Mm. I don't know if it's the same reasons. It doesn't sound like it necessarily. I think a lot of that also rubbed on to me. So generally when, you know, when I get summoned for investigations or things like that, I feel damn scared, right? It's just, at the same time, somehow I got into improv, which is like the least... it's like a super democratic kind of egalitarian kind of art form, right? Yeah. Because honestly, what do you need to do a show, right? I think you asked Peter Brook. I could be misquoting him. Mm. You need an actor and maybe an audience.
Mm.
And that's kind of it.
Yeah, and a stage.
You don't even need a script, right? Which is improv is like, do you need a script? No. Do you need rules? No. I mean, honestly, the rules of improv are really just
guidelines.
You
know,
suggestions even. Like if you try to do the yes and principle, it usually works. But then if you block someone, can it work? Yeah.
Yeah, you can still make something interesting out of it.
You can still do something. And as long as you're engaged with your audience and with whoever is with you, then you're probably gonna be fine.
Mm.
And so, in a way, improv is this shapeless, amorphous blob of things, which is, in many ways, the antithesis of an orderly society. Except, if you follow the rules, your society is going to be great, because if you keep making your partner look good and you are agreeing to each other, and you know you're making, you're embracing the prospect of making things weird by trying something new, that also makes for a really interesting blueprint for society. I think, optimistically, it could be quite good.
That's very interesting. I like how you paint improv, and it's a microcosm of society as a whole. That's very interesting.
I think as an improviser, if you take the guidelines, really, the principles of improv, the way they were intended to be taken, it will improve things in general, right? Because making your partner look good, yes, and you look at what's happening around you, you try to make it better, right? And if you try something new and it doesn't quite work out, you learn from that, you make things better again. These are great rules.
Yeah. It's that optimism right there, like, and hope, I guess.
Yeah.
There is always hope.
And that's why I tell my classes when I start, right? Like, I'm going to assume they're good people until they prove otherwise.
Mm.
And I would say so far in Singapore, at least in the improv community here, we've been quite lucky in that we haven't had raging assholes or, you know, the kind of people that Me Too is designed to take down. Well, not so designed, but intended to take down. We haven't had those people yet, which is great. You know, it's going to happen because I'm both an optimist and a pessimist. I studied political science in school, so I have a very dim view of human nature in general. But when it comes, I'm sure that the community will rally around and make things better together.
Sure. I believe so as well.
Cool. Awesome. So I talk about tangents. You know, I'm only half his age, less than half his age, but I wander off on tangents myself. What were we talking about?
About improv, right?
Yeah, probably about improv. It's always about improv. Yeah.
I guess how I started with improv.
Yeah, you've mentioned that, which is great. So there was that show, then you came back because it's part of exchange.
So I came back and then I focused on my studies, my thesis, and then I did other stuff. So I started freelance doing stage show acting as well as attractions. I guess that's how I employed improv.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I also started taking 101 during that time.
When was this? 2015, 16?
2016, I guess, 2016, 17, around that period.
Okay.
And then I pursued other things. I guess, you know, just being curious, I just wanted to try different places and people and environment. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so in 2020, I guess it brought me back here.
Okay. Mm. Okay, cool. Awesome. So how would you describe your relationship to improv?
My relationship with improv. Or to improv. With improv.
To with. Both are fine.
I think it's... it's that friend that's always there for you.
Okay.
You know, like... I whenever I go on stage, right? Like, before a show, I make it a point to just inform my... what you call them, your fellow partners, your actors, right? To like, I'll just tell them that, hey, I got your back, because that's what it's about. It's about making sure that, you know, it's, even though you're on stage, right, but even though you could be doing a solo piece, but you're never truly alone. Mm-hmm. You're there to support a larger thing, either your colleague, your partner, or the story at large. Mm-hmm. So improv is similar to that, where it's like my bro that they'll always got my back, but at the same time, it's I have to make sure that I have your back as well.
Right. Mm. Yeah, it's nice. Cool. Okay. Seems quite warm and wholesome.
It is. As in, that's how I feel about improv at the current moment.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So you finished your 201 recently, starting 301 today. Mm. Do you have a showcase lined up?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Well,
we'll get on that.
Yes, mm-hmm. I don't have a theme yet. Maybe here's an open notice, like, hey, yeah, I'm available.
Gotta fix that. I feel like that's one of the current issues that at least the scene here is facing. Mm. You get people who are eager to do stuff, but it's hard to get a group together because a lot of the groups are class groups, and sometimes class groups are 50-50 chance. Some people like their classes, or the classes have an organizer who's willing to pull people together, and sometimes they don't. And when that doesn't happen, it doesn't really organically happen. So as a company, we want to encourage that behavior where people come together and intend to do shows together.
Yeah.
Because that's how they continue to practice. And one of our aims really is for people to have a sustainable improv practice. Mm. Both as a scene, right? As a scene, we need people to be doing shows and to watch each other's shows and to encourage and get better together as improvisers. But also, as individuals, we would like them to keep up their engagement in different ways. That's why we do the jams and whatnot. I think you've been to the jams, right?
I have been. I'm also going to one this weekend as well.
Mm, okay, okay. Mm. Yeah, and those are fun. So if you're an improviser here in Singapore and you haven't been to one of the jams, go check them out. Whether it's organized by TIC or the others, other people, maybe they're doing their own jams, go check, because jams are the best way to meet other people, other improvisers, figure out what playstyles do you enjoy, what can you learn from other people's playstyles, and see what else there's out there in the scene. Because the scenes, you know, it's more than one group or one company, really.
It is. And to your point about, like, finding a team, right? Like, I do understand the whole rationale behind it. But at the same time, I would also advise to just be patient. Mm. You know, because I guess for myself, I'm not really in a rush. But, you know, I'm just trying to interact with as many improvisers as I can and try to find which one is the right match or mold. You know, because maybe you and I, we can be the right fit for this kind of performances. But maybe if I want to do something else, maybe I want to do something more political or more long form, maybe, or short form. And then maybe you're not the right fit for me.
Yeah, so, absolutely. You know,
just need to keep experimenting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Miguel spent half his podcast talking about how teams die.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can happen. But for a team to die, you need to get into a team first.
Yeah, you need to be in a team
first. So not saying that you join a team just so you can make it die, but rather, you know, this is part of the process of life, right? But you'll find your voice, you'll find, like, people you enjoy playing with. Like, the Schemers, if you check out Nikhil's podcast, they've been together for what seems like a ridiculous amount of time. I think it's like 8 years now or something.
You know how teams can stay alive? You know, like, how in all, like, WhatsApp group chat, there's always that one person, like, hey, let's do a meetup. Yep. Let's do a meetup.
Yep. The organizer person, yeah. So if you find someone like that, that person can keep things going. I will say, if you have someone like that in your group, please treasure them, affirm them, you know, send them some grab food treats once in a while. Let them know that you appreciate them, because they are human as well, and they will run out of energy if they see that everyone else is riding on their coattails. Please give them some energy and, you know, validation as well. What kind of improv are you interested in possibly exploring at some point? If you find a team, or even like if you're part of a project group, right? So a project group for us, what we mean is not so much a permanent team where, you know, everyone always plays together for 15 years like the Schemers are doing.
Yeah.
More like, oh, we want to do a specific show, we come together for enough rehearsals to do that show, and then we'll play it by ear.
To be honest, that sounds something that is that I might be interested to do. Because, you know, you're working towards a common objective, like let's just do for this particular gem or show. And then we can always, you know, like mingle with other people, you know, so that commitment level is there, but it's not like a long-term commitment like marriage, that kind. Like, you're not bonded to like the schemas for life. You can always like, hey, I like this team, so I want to like do a show with them. I guess coming from a freelance lifestyle, I've always been able to, I've been someone that can kind of like blend with different teams. So like, I'm quite adaptable like that, where let's say if you're doing something on a particular topic, let's say maybe on society, then like, hey, I might have something to offer, but then I can also do something else, like maybe a short form kind of a team.
I think that's happening. We want to encourage that a little bit. For a while, there was a group called Ad Hoc Improv that did specifically that. I think they've toned down their activities quite a bit since the pandemic started.
Are they on Ad Hoc right now?
Perfect timing. Nice. But the basic idea behind them, they would purposely organize one-off shows based around a specific idea that someone wanted to do. But they wouldn't rehearse, I think, or they do very limited rehearsals. The idea was to make it as low commitment as possible. Whereas I believe Hazel's launched an audition process for a show coming up in July, where I think she said there's going to be 12 rehearsals, and I think half the community is like, what?
What?
12? I don't have that kind of time.
12?
I literally don't have the kind of time. I would need to travel back in time and then clear out my schedule and then come back before I have this kind of time. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, that's a lot of commitment.
It is a lot of commitment. I think, time management is an issue for many people. Not least Hazel. So, you know, that's probably part of the reason. Don't worry, she doesn't actually listen to this, so that's great.
She doesn't?
So it's probably fine. Yeah. Unless someone tells her that she's been mentioned, and then like, she comes
unless she's mentioned in
one.
That list, like Hazel Ho, right?
But podcasts aren't really her thing, so I'm not overly concerned.
Hey, it's her loss.
Yeah, probably. Apparently, she'll come on episode 20. So I'm trying to reach that number, but it's gonna take at least another 2 months. So
do you have like people planned up till 20 already?
What do you think?
Yeah, I think you have at least a series already.
No, I don't.
You don't
have. I generally ask around and say, who might be interested in stuff or who might be interesting to listen to, and then I ask them and they either say yes or no. So far, no one said no, which is nice.
So maybe for everyone to get an idea, right? So when he approached me, I actually gave Kim a call and I was like, you sure you want me? You sure you want to get someone like older or like who's been around longer? Like, what can I offer? Yeah, because because of the fact that TIC has been around for so long, right? So, you know, and you see like on your posters all these people. So, you know, when you hear the podcast, you hear about these legends, you know, you'll immediately wonder like, hey, how can I be sharing things about improv and they have not been on the podcast yet? So I guess I do have that... what do you call it? There's an inferiority complex, I guess. You know, just the idea of that. I'm still new in improv. I'm still learning.
I will say, when I started out, I was new too. And I had all these doubts as well. And I've stuck around. So I am where I am now just because of that bloody-mindedness of not leaving.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? And that's the same for a lot of the people, right? If you look at the schemas, there were people who were there for 8 years. There were people who have left. There are people who have stopped improvising altogether. And that's okay. Right? Lives happen.
Yeah.
Improv, I love improv, but also I'm cognizant that life does not equals improv. Right? And there are other things that people can feasibly do with their time.
Of course.
And like the schemas, right? When they now have more experience than I did when I started out. Well, at least more time. I'm not sure about more experiences. So they probably did because, it was just the general spirit of starting out for me was I'm not sure what I'm doing, but I would like to try it anyway. And that's where we start, right?
And that's fun, right? Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but let's just do it.
Yes, pretty much. Who knows where it could end up? We didn't have an exit strategy, right? Despite our parents' wishes. We didn't know when we were going to stop. And actually, a few of the years came. Like, we will stop every couple of years and we're like, this hits the conditions for which we said we would stop, but it seems to be improving, right? Do we want to continue anyway? And we did, clearly, because in some other alternate reality, we stopped. And right now, I'm some civil servant somewhere slaving over some some rule or whatever. But in this particular reality, I did not stop. And that's where I am now.
Yeah, I get that. Like, I've been telling myself, like, okay, this will be my final year doing something creative. But I keep doing it. But in my head, I'm like, because I believe in multiple universe, right? I believe in the multiverse. Mm. So I believe in other verses. There's an Al-Hafiz Sanusi there that's already married, or he's in jail right now, or his past, you know. So I believe in that. Mm-hmm. I'm just lucky that I'm still doing what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. I'm still searching, but at least I'm doing something with it.
Okay.
Awesome. To your point, right? Mm. There's a great quote by a great villain, which his name is Captain Cole from the CW Flash series. Okay. So he's played by Wentworth Miller, the guy who plays who was in Prison Break, right?
Mm.
So this was like an alternate universe thing where they had to do like a bank heist together. So imagine like a villain and the Flash doing a bank heist together. And then he was telling the Flash, there are four rules that you need to know. The first is to make a plan. The second is to execute the plan. The third is to expect the plan to go off the rails. The fourth is to make a new plan. That's what it's all about. You know, you have an idea of what you want to do. Like even in improv, you have an idea of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Then you step into it, you give your suggestion, you let others offer their suggestion, and it's not going to be what you imagine it to be.
Oh no, never.
Yeah,
never.
Then you just have to, you know, expect that it's going to go off the rails. Just make a new plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that we tell our students, improv is the best way of preparing to be unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, you can't prepare for everything, but if you have improv as a toolkit, and when the unexpected happens, you are able to react in a good way.
Yeah.
In a way that's productive, that makes things happen in a way that, you know, works out eventually at some point.
Yeah.
What's your favorite improv thing?
I don't know, I was just listening to all the podcasts. I don't know, I guess I'm geeking out over the podcast, right? You keep asking this, like,
yeah.
Well, so what is your thing? Why do you ask this? What's your thing, Kim?
Like improv, like my favorite?
Yeah, what's your thing?
Well, the reason behind this thing is because improv incorporates so many different things, right? You have improv that's jazz, for example. Mm. You have contact improvisation, the dance version of it. And you have life in general, right? Mm. Or sometimes it's actors who are good at improv. Like I was recently talking to a friend about Robin Williams.
Oh, yes.
And how he improvised some of the parts in like, say, Mrs. Doubtfire. And some of those parts were amazing. Some of the best parts of the movie, right? Or you have just, you know, people who are reacting in the moment to life happening to them and creating things out of that. And so I didn't want to narrow it down to something that was like, say, a show or a character or something, because it could be anything. So that's why the question is, what's your favorite improv thing? And like, basically, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of improv that, you know, either embodies it for you or that represents improv to you? And why that thing?
Why
in particular?
That thing?
Yeah.
All right. So honestly, I don't have like a particular moment or memory or like an object of a thing, but I would say like probably not really a mantra, but something that I live by, which reflects I guess my love for improv. It's so there's the like the English version, but I'll share the Malay version, right? So it's in like the Malay hip hop scene, they always use this term called goja, or like hashtag goja, or the longer would be goja don't scared. So it's basically like goja means like just do it, like goja. You know, goja don't scared. Like if I would, like if you were to ask me like, Fizz, I want to travel to this place, then I'll be like, yeah, goja. You know, or you say you want to try this like mala hot pot, but then you don't have like a good spice level, right? Then I'm like, yeah, goja. You know, or like you see that cute chick across the bar, and then you want to talk to that chick, right? Then, you know, like if any other person, I'll say goja, but because you're already in a relationship, right? Then I'm like, no, don't go. You know, but essentially, it's this idea of goja, like, just do it.
Mm.
You know, because you don't know what to expect, so just go in and do it. Just expect something.
Okay.
I would say the closest version more academic version to this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you heard or read Brené Brown?
No.
So, okay, so for anyone, if you are interested in learning how to overcome shame or embracing vulnerability, she has a great podcast. She has a book called Daring Greatly. But I would say the best introduction is to just YouTube TED Talk Brené Brown. And then, you know, that's one of her top viewed videos. But essentially, her one of her books, Daring Greatly, is that idea of like just how to overcome shame and fear is to just get yourself in there, do it.
Okay.
And she's taking it from a quote from the former American president, Teddy Roosevelt. So it's a long thing. But if you search the man in the arena, right? So Daring Greatly comes from there. It's the idea that, you know, people can talk whatever they want, but essentially it's the man in the arena, the one who's putting the effort, the hours in there. And I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially what it means is the person who's daring greatly, you know, essentially he has something to remember by. So I mean, I would urge people to just, you know, just goja, do it, or and just dare it greatly. Because at most, even if you fail, right, you fail knowing that you've tried, knowing that you've actually dared above and beyond what you could have done. Yeah. Like, I would say, when doing improv, not just necessarily in improv, but in acting, when I have to make certain improv choices, right? I would say most of the times, the best choices I've made, right, have been times when I was afraid. But then I was like, okay, let me just go, don't scared. Let me just dare greatly. And then I remember those moments.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. That's lovely to hear. And that's really the prospect of, you know, not knowing how it's going to go, but seeing what happens regardless.
And I apologize because I don't think that's really an improv thing that you were looking for.
Oh, but no, 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 no.
Essentially, that was what I... To me, that was the thing that that brings me closer to improv, like this, that concept.
Yeah, and I see that, right? I mean, I've had you for, I think, 201, and I think that's the way you play. And I think that's just having that sense of, let me try this and see where it goes, is what is kind of one of the goals that we want our students to be able to reach at some point in their careers, right? Because, you know, fear is a great thing. Fear keeps us alive and safe in many ways. But we also, as living, thinking human beings, we want to know how to use that fear best and when to listen to it and when to say, you know, take its suggestions with a pinch of salt and say, hey, I know I'm afraid, but, you know, even if I fail at this, what's the worst that could happen?
What's the worst that could happen?
Let me try it and see where it goes. And then you might learn something or you will experience something, and life is about experience.
Yeah.
We experience something. We are experienced, not just, you know, not as an adjective, but also as a verb. We want to be experienced by people, with people, and then from there, we make the rest of our lives better.
Very good, Kip. Very good. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, but you don't get the experience if you hold back.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you don't do something, you're not going to get that experience. You're not going to be experienced.
Can so I share, try. Like, someone that I've recently been rereading and watching? I mean, this month is, for me, right? So June is like the Anthony Bourdain month.
Okay.
Because he was born and he passed in this month. Mm. So I was reading his book, and then I was rewatching his Parts Unknown. One of the quotes that he would say, right, is if you don't risk the bad meals, you'll never experience the good ones.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, you know, if you want to keep it safe, you can just eat potatoes in every single meal. But then, is that the life that we want to lead?
Yes, yeah. Have a little spice in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Okay, moving on a little bit. Okay, so, I mean, it seems like you are, if you already mentioned some of the things that you're interested in, a lot of the creative stuff, acting, spoken word, and so on. Has improv interfaced with that other aspect of your creative life in any way?
As in, how has it
affected?
Affected.
Like, well, you mentioned the acting part already. Does it, like, as a writer, as a poet, as a performer, right, does improv affected that?
Yes. Because the only time when I feel most vulnerable is doing spoken word. Because yes, even though I am taking on a persona, but essentially what I'm performing is what I'm actually writing, right? So these are my words. With acting, I'm actually hiding behind a character. With improv, you know, if it's going to be a short form, I know that I'm just hiding behind a concept or a character which I will just let go in like 5-10 minutes. You know, but with spoken word, what I'm performing is essentially me.
Interesting.
So I mean, to me, that's the most difficult thing, because I've always been someone that's, you know, I don't like to share things. You know, like even the idea of being on a podcast, I'm like, what do I want to share, you know, like. So but with spoken word, it gives me, but I have to take that opportunity, you know, because you can have a persona, but essentially your persona is a blend of who you are, you know. The writer persona will seeps into the performance.
Right.
So with improv, it gives me that opportunity to embrace that, to understand that, you know what, it's just saying yes to it, and by doing it, right, I may actually make someone else's life better, because we can connect and resonate at certain points.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Cool. I think we're coming close to the end. So one last question for you.
Okay.
Where are you headed next?
I am headed to 301 next. So that's where I'm going. But I might be just getting a bite after this. But as in, you're talking about in life in general, is it?
Could be. So what? No one has actually taken that first time. Everyone goes like, oh man, I'm going to do stuff. Like stuff. No one ever says, oh, I'm going to that place.
Yeah.
We could.
I mean, why think long term and you still have short term, right? Like I still have time after class, so I might want to get a bite. Then after that, I'll go for class. I'll see how it goes. Then I'll take tomorrow, and then I'll take the day after. Yeah, but essentially, what I want to do in life is, I don't know, to be honest.
Okay.
I'm just taking as much as I plan for things, but I'm also the kind that will just throw it out. Then I'll just, let me see how it goes.
Number three in the...
Yes. Yeah. So expect things to go off the rails and then just make a new plan. Yeah.
Okay.
Because you never know what's going to happen next month. And like, oh, sorry, no more classes. You know, we have to, you know, things happen. Ooh. And, oh, okay.
I had a hairy moment today while waiting for Lawrence to come in and, you know, tell us what's what.
Yeah, it's like every Friday, everyone's like waiting anxiously, okay, what's going to be the news for next week?
Auto-PM. Oh, they're filing in. Oh, okay. Like, drum roll. Okay. What's going to happen? Is he going to ghost us again? Is he going to text us? What's going to happen? Today things are fine. So,
it's good
hopefully
news so
far. It's an upward trajectory. We all get vaccinated, hopefully sooner rather than later. I'm allowed to get vaccinated now, which is awesome.
It's great, right? We are in that age bracket where we can get vaccinated.
Yeah, mine on Tuesday, so fingers crossed.
Oh, that's great. Mine's like next weekend.
But thank you so much for spending the last 45 minutes with me, Hafiz. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Everyone, this has been our Hafiz Anuzi. This has been Geniuses, Poets and Artists. Today, no competition, but if you'd like to, please share and subscribe. And also, if you have feedback, suggestions, or you want to be on the podcast, drop us an email at contact@improv.sg and I'd be more than happy to have a chat with you. In the meantime, take care of yourself. Bye, Hafiz.
Goodbye.
And speak truth to power.